Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. And thank you for joining me for another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Coleman. Thank you so much for joining me. I am so sorry that I've been gone for the last few months. I know some of you might be wondering if I was even coming back, if I had just forgotten about you, if I had just given up on these podcasts. But alas, no, I've been around. And unfortunately, I don't even know if I really have a great reason as to why I haven't been here. Please forgive me. But the reality is the reason why I haven't been around very much lately is mostly because I've been reading a lot of fiction lately, and I just felt like I sort of needed a break from the nonfiction that I was reading. I wanted to try to get some other stuff in because I've had some friends who've been talking about other various works of fiction, so I thought I'd give them a try, and I got kind of into it, and I just wasn't motivated to read any sort of nonfiction stuff. So I took a little break off, but I have gotten through some nonfiction stuff and I'm ready to review it. So let's go ahead and get to some books. The first book, well, when I was trying to get back into nonfiction again, one of the first things that I did was I thought would be easier for me is if I got an audiobook to get into the nonfiction. And the audiobook that I got was a book called The Great Courses. And if any of you don't know, The Great Courses, I buy them off of Audible, but you can really get them anywhere. And they're a series of lectures by great professors who are well accomplished in their fields who talk about various things ranging from science to art to entertainment to music to movies to, you know, astronomy to all sorts of different things. So What I decided to do is one of the things I've been interested in a lot lately is the whole concept of cognitive behavioral therapy. And the reason why is because one of my closest friends who I grew up with is he's a marriage family therapist, and he's very into cognitive behavioral therapy. So he's spoken to me over the years about it. And I wanted to learn more. And I've also read a number of Jonathan Haidt's books, who is a professor at Cal Berkeley, and he wrote one of my absolute favorite books called The Righteous Mind, which you can listen to the podcast on it. But a lot of it is he talks about is how the brain works with thinking and why people make some of the choices that we do and ways that you can influence people and different ways of hearing messages and how to be aware of your own biases. And it's really wonderful. So he talked a bit about cognitive behavioral therapy. And to my knowledge, he's not a therapist or a counselor or anything of that nature. So it seems to me as if cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, has really sort of made inroads into popular culture, not just for people who are horribly distressed and trying to, you know, recover from depression or alcohol abuse or anything of that nature, although CBT can be very effective for those things as well. But just basically something that anybody can use with the right guidance to improve one's life. So first of all, a couple of things about cognitive behavioral therapy that I learned from this audio recording of these lectures is, number one, the whole concept of cognitive behavioral therapy is not based upon something that requires medicine. Well, I know medicine's a bit of a loose term. You need medicine, but not in the pharmacological sense. Medicine in the sense that you are going to have conversations with people, and or I guess your therapist or whoever is mentoring you through the process. And through these conversations, you're going to arrive at different conclusions. And with these conclusions, you are going to begin to make certain decisions or choices in your life in order to improve what it is that you want improving. Now, what I gleaned from this lecturer who was talking about CBT is that one of the problems with therapy is that it just seems to be a bit of an ongoing process. It never stops. You go, you talk about your problems, the therapist tries to give you some rationalization as to why you're doing what you're doing, and it just becomes an ongoing process. So from what I could tell, cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, doesn't have that much to do with actual conversations about what has happened or what hasn't happened, only in so much as the therapist is able to glean enough information to try to possibly put together a plan of action for their patient. So unlike, I guess, traditional therapy, you want to go in and start talking about problems that you have or your life story or anything of that nature. You would simply focus on what are the things that are harming you in your life and what are some ways that it can be improved upon. So one of the things that I noticed about cognitive behavioral therapy, besides the fact that it's very results driven, is there's a lot of data involved, a lot of, I think, what you'd call qualitative data, meaning that it's data that's derived through conversations, through self-assessments, through surveys, through checklists, and you're constantly keeping these records and you're going over them and you're discussing them with the therapist. Now, another thing, one of the reasons that I think people are sometimes turned off to CBT is there's a lot of work involved. Keeping records, keeping a journal, going over your thought process. One of the case studies that they had was this guy who would frequently lose his temper and get angry and start shouting. And his therapist was telling him to keep a journal of what led to the event, how he reacted, whether his reactions were rational, whether it was the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do, what he could have done to avoid the situations. And yeah, it takes some work. There's not going to be something as simple as being able to just take a pill or, you know, make a few small adjustments in your life and then everything is going to be where you want them to be. It just doesn't work like that. And I think another thing that turns people off to CBT is you have to be aware of the fact that you're not going to see immediate results most of the time. It's going to be a long, fairly slow process. But if you can get through all of these things, CBT actually has a number of validating studies, and the lecturer goes through many of them to its effectiveness. And he was saying that one of the problems with therapy is sometimes we go with what our gut instincts are, or we kind of leave it in the hands of people who are doing what comes naturally to them or their own personal training, which is very often outdated. And we're not looking at what are scientifically proven data-driven methods, which is everything that CBT is trying to be, from what I can gather. I think another thing to keep in mind, though, in terms of why the results for CBT tend to be really good is because it takes a certain personality type in order to want to participate in the CBT process. For example, somebody who doesn't have a whole lot of motivation to want to get better, I don't know how effective CBT is going to be for them, because the person might not want to go through all the rigor and all of the work that's necessary to do all of these things. They may not understand what's necessary. They may already be resigned to defeat. I'm not disparaging those sort of people. I've been in similar situations myself, so I know how hard it is to dig yourself out of one of those holes. Interestingly enough, I actually have another friend who I play board games with. I'm in a bit of a board game group. Yeah, I know. Nerddom on Overdrive. And he actually is also he's a social worker and a psychologist. He's been in the military and he's gay. So he has a lot of different, and he's been in combat. So he talks about how he has suffered in the past with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And so when he counsels his patients, he really is able to come from a lot of different perspectives. And I was asking him what his thoughts were on CBT. And what he said was, he doesn't really like it very much. He says that the problem is that a lot of people don't necessarily have the skill set to just begin to make these sort of changes in their life. They may be so depressed or so angry or so upset that they don't have the required skills, as I've said, to put a plan of action into place. So, I mean, that's another thing to consider as well, is that it's not necessarily going to be successful for all people. Not everybody, you know, is on the CBT bandwagon the same way that I am. Another issue I find with CBT is it does seem to be a bit subjective in the sense that the only metric for happiness or improvement seems to be how the patient feels about the improvement or how they think they're progressing. It kind of reminds me a bit of, you know, I work in education, so my specialty is primary and secondary education of K through 12th graders. And it kind of reminds me of this new wave of education that we're experiencing here in America called the Common Core, which is a new way of teaching education. It seems a bit repackaged to me. I've sort of heard this in a lot of different forms over the years from different classes I've taken. But what it basically means is that you take a very in-depth intellectual approach to learning conceptually, okay? And so instead of learning content, which has been a bit more of the traditional model of education, you're learning more the concepts behind the branch of education. So for example, instead of learning that a comma separates two clauses, you would try to analyze, you know, what consists of a sentence. At what points do you need to break sentences up? How would you go about doing? How would sentences look differently if they didn't have certain commas or other punctuations in its place? So that kind of thing. But again, the point that I'm making to relate it back to CBT is that it's also a bit subjective, in my opinion. If you were to ask 10 educational specialists what exactly is the Common Core, you're probably going to get 10 different responses. So that's another thing to think about, is that I don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way to do CBT. It's really just going to be a matter of what your therapist wants to do and what you're willing to do and what you agree upon. And that seems to be another part of CBT as well, is that it's not the sort of authoritarian traditional model of therapy where you're listening to your therapist, they're dispensing directions with what to do, and you're going to try to follow them to the best of your ability. It doesn't seem to work like that. What it seems to be is it's a partnership between the patient and the therapist where they collectively talk about goals or they talk about strategies and they come up with a game plan together. It's a much more symbiotic relationship rather than an authoritarian one, at least from what I could gather from the lecturer's point of view. Another thing too is that it's not a frozen process. It kind of reminds me a bit of, I also, in my spare time, I like to train in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And I can remember the first conversation I had with my trainer maybe about 8 years ago when I started taking it. And he was saying that one of the things about Brazilian jiu-jitsu that sets it apart from other martial arts is it's not a frozen art form. There isn't a right way to do it, and that will always be the right way of doing it. It's an evolving process. The moves and the techniques, some are going to work well throughout your jiu-jitsu career. Others are going to have to be modified. Some will be lost or forgotten altogether. And you're always continuously improving. You're never going to get to the point where you've mastered everything, because that doesn't exist. It's an evolving process. And I think that's kind of how cognitive behavioral therapy is going to work and how it's going to move forward into the future, in that the way we think of CBT today might not be the same way that it's approached 5 years from now. I don't know if the techniques will be the same. Maybe the overall philosophy will still be at its central core, but I think the practice methods are just going to vary from person to person as more research and data comes out. So, I'd like to talk a little bit more about is some of the techniques that are used during cognitive behavioral therapy. And from what I can gather from what the lecturer did, and what I like about this audiobook is that he, instead of trying to just go over all of the nuances of how CBT works, I would say about 50% of what he was doing are just he's replaying and analyzing interviews that he's had with his patients. And so that really kind of helped me to understand what a CBT seminar would probably be like for somebody. And one of the things that I like that they did is that, in a lot of ways, the therapist tries to counteract what would be natural ways of the human mind thinking. Our brains aren't always rational. We tend to be prone to streaks of melancholy, streaks of euphoria, and we don't live in this Aristotelian world where we're constantly at a point of rational thought, and only occasionally does our mind venture off into areas of extremism. Okay, I think most of the time our brain tends to ping pong back and forth with extreme thoughts, and we have to continuously rein in these thoughts. And if this sounds very much like Buddhist philosophy, I think it's because a lot of this seems to be rooted in that sort of Eastern way of thinking. So one of the things that the therapist would do when he's talking with his patient is he would say something to the effect of, for example, okay, so you went to a party last night and you were hoping to socialize with a lot of people, but nobody really spoke to you. How did that make you feel? And the person would say, well, I felt lonely. I felt like a loser. I felt like nobody really liked me. I felt left out. He says, okay, so is that how you think about yourself? The patient might say yes. And then they would say, well, let's think about this. Do you actually have any family or friends? Do you do things for enjoyment? Are you a law-abiding citizen? Do you have hopes and goals and dreams and ambitions? Do you have moments of clarity? Are there things that you value about yourself? And when you get down to this cold, hard reason, the person should come to the conclusion that, yeah, okay, they may be going through a bad time. They may have made some mistakes. But by and large, the average person is a good person, full of hopes and dreams, full of wonders, full of aspirations of doing good for themselves, not harming others if possible. And that's really how I think that is the average mindset. And so that's what the CBT therapist is trying to get somebody to understand, that a lot of the thoughts of depression and anxiety and hurt aren't necessarily accurate. Okay, it's not so much that they're bad, which they are, but they're not really accurate. And I think that's what CBT is trying to help the patient to realize. Now, a couple limitations of CBT. CBT, the therapist says, is very good for treating mild to moderate depression and addiction, but it may not be enough for severe depression or severe addiction symptoms. In that case, there's probably going to have to be a more strict pharmacological approach. There may be medical doctors that are also going to be necessary, at least at the beginning. But that's not to say that CBT can't play a role at some later point in time with people who are going through these methods. I think a big reason why a lot of people don't want to do CBT is because they may not see the value for paying money to someone to have conversations with them. But I like what the professor was saying about this. He says he's astounded by how much money people are willing to pay for improving their physical appearance in the form of plastic surgery or gym memberships or new clothes or cosmetics or what have you. They said, but we're really reluctant to pay money to try to improve our mental output or our mental health when that is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop, okay? If there's anything that really our focus and our resources should be put into, I agree with the author, it should be being able to improve our mental outlook. Now, just because CBT doesn't really use medication, that doesn't mean that the professor was anti-medication. As a matter of fact, he was very clear about that. He says he's not anti-medicine or anti-pharmacy drugs. He says that what he's just trying to explain to people is that there are other options besides using those, and that's what CBT tries to offer people. Now, the last point that I'm going to make about CBT is that it's not ever going to be just one thing. It isn't going to be a process of just talking or just taking medication or anything. It's going to be a conglomeration of possibly medication, focused on data, discussions, journaling. And none of these things were ever created by cognitive behavioral therapy. All what cognitive behavioral therapy is, I think, is just an umbrella that gives suggestions on how to incorporate all of these different aspects into one type of therapy. Okay? So yeah, I mean, I personally would like to see a CBT therapist at some point if I can get the time. I am going to continue to, I've been trying to, you know, practice more meditation and other sort of strategies that involve focusing your mind and not allowing your thoughts to run away with you. And I've had varying degrees of success with it. But again, I think if nothing else, I think that just understanding, learning, and knowing about cognitive behavioral therapy for everyone is a very valuable tool. And I'm thankful that the professors put these lectures together. So if you want to learn more about an overview for beginners of cognitive behavioral therapy, then go on Audible and check out the great courses, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. That's it for now. Like I said before, we'll be back in a couple weeks with a new review for you. And until then, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for staying to the end of the show, and happy reading.